The Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order, and I will note this meeting is taking place under House Rule 10.01. Ms. Hirsch, please take the roll.
Chair Houseman?
Present.
Houseman, present. Vice Chair Howard?
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Tice? Representative Tice? Representative Egbadje?
Present.
Egbadje, present. Representative Bliss?
Present.
Bliss, present. Representative Gomez? Representative Gomez? Representative Hassan?
Hassan is present.
Hassan, present. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Herr? Representative Herr? Representative Juergens?
Juergens, present.
Juergens, present. Representative Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Farr? Representative Farr? Representative Ryer?
Ryer, present.
Ryer, present. And Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you.
Gomez is present. Sorry.
Gomez, present.
Thank you very much. The next item of business is approval of the minutes from Thursday, March 31. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Members, any corrections? Seeing none, please unmute yourselves for a voice vote. All those in favor of approval of the minutes signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Members, today's agenda is a walkthrough of the VE delete all amendment to House File 4376. That was the governor's budget bill introduced earlier. That's the Housing Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill, and a nonpartisan staff will do the walkthrough, followed by a hearing of public testimony. So we'll have the staff, nonpartisan staff walkthrough, and then I think we have 17 testifiers, so that will be wonderful. But I would like to begin by saying House File 4376 is the result of our collaboration with housing advocates working across the state and across the housing continuum. Many, many people have been involved in this conversation. This bill makes historic housing investments and takes major strides in addressing some of the state's most pressing housing issues, reducing the racial homeownership gap, preserving and protecting naturally occurring affordable housing, increasing the housing supply in the state, providing financial resources and overdue protections for Minnesota renters, and helping those closest to experiencing homelessness. Every bill included in this omnibus bill has been heard and vetted by this committee, and I'm appreciative of the role and partnership all of you have had in shaping this legislation. So we will begin the walkthrough with a review of the budget spreadsheet with the committee's fiscal analyst, Joe Harney. Mr. Harney, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Houseman, Joe Harney, House Fiscal. I will be sharing my screen here in just a second. I'm going to pause for 2 seconds to make sure that is the case.
We can see it.
Great. Before I begin the walkthrough of Article 1, the appropriations article, I'd like to orient members to 3 additional items in your packets, in addition to the delete everything amendment for House File 4376. So those two spreadsheets were included in your packets. One is dated April 4th, 2022, with a timestamp of 12:18 p.m. This represents the February forecast base for Minnesota Housing Finance, the governor's position in the governor's budget bill, and the House position in the DE amendment. For the sake of clarity and visibility, I will be presenting a second spreadsheet, which is just a pared-down version of the main one, dated April 4th, 2022 at 12:20 p.m. This again, just a pared down version with columns F here and G here representing the House position for the omnibus bill. The third and final item to draw your attention to is an A5 author's amendment that I understand the chair will offer tomorrow in committee. This A5 author's amendment impacts the appropriations article in two places that is reflected on this spreadsheet, and that is a adjustment to the challenge program appropriation in the TAILS and an adjustment to the Department of Human Rights base appropriation for House File 8835. Now with that, members, I'm going to begin by walking through the change items, starting with line 30, the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program line here represents the House position to increase the base in fiscal year 23 by $20 million, and in the TAILS each fiscal year by $17,117,000. The new base for the Housing Challenge Program in the current biennium would then be $48,650,000, and in the TAILS, the base would be $60,084,000. Moving on to the second page of the walkthrough spreadsheet, I would draw your attention to line 33. Line 33 is a deposit in the Housing Trust Fund for rental assistance. That amount increases the Housing Trust Fund base by $10 million in the current biennium and $20 million in the next. I'm going to hop up again here to show you that on the current base activity. Line 6 here represents the new base for the Housing Trust Fund and rental assistance in the current biennium and the TAILS. Hopping back down once again, line 34 represents an increase to the base for Homework Starts with Home. That is $10 million in the current biennium and $20 million in the next biennium. On line 7 above, that increase to the base is $13.5 million in the current biennium and makes a new base of $23.5 million in the next. Line 35 is an increase to the Family Homelessness Prevention and Assistance Program. That amount is $14 million in 23 and $20 million in the TAILS. That increase can be seen to the base on line 9. Next, there is a one-time appropriation on line 38 to Local Housing Trust Fund grants for $7 million. On line 40, there is a base appropriation of $5 million to strengthen the supportive housing model. The House position is for $5 million again in fiscal year 23 and a total of $10 million in the TAILS. Next, there's a one-time appropriation on line 41 for the flexible financing of capital costs. That amount is $5 million in fiscal year 23. Moving to bills heard and laid over by the committee here, on line 43, there is a, as amended, community stabilization program created per House File 443, excuse me. That amount on line 43 is a one-time appropriation of $100 million in fiscal year 23 and an $80 million appropriation in the TAILS as base. Drawing your attention then to line 44, Lead Safe Homes. This is a one-time appropriation for $2 million in fiscal year 23. And then line 45, Department of Human Rights is receiving a base appropriation of $383,000 in the current biennium, and that extends into the TAILS. Again, this amount is amended with the A5 author's amendment to the DE for House File 4376. And then to round out the change items here, lines 46 through 49 represent one-time funding. Line 46 is House File 3287, the mediation grant program, one-time funding for $425,000. Line 27 is House File 1635 as amended, the home ownership education program. That is a one-time appropriation for $1 million. Line 48 is House File 4269, the First Generation Home Buyers Assistance Program. That's a one-time appropriation for $50 million. I will note that this one-time appropriation is available until the end of fiscal year 25. Lastly, Madam Chair, members, on line 49 is House File 3837, Section 3, Manufactured Home Lending Grants. This is a one-time appropriation from the general fund for $5,192,000. To round out the change items to the appropriations to the department, to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, in total, in the current biennium, there's $230 million added, and in the tails, $185,000 added. Of that $185 million, I will note that needs to be less than the appropriations to the Department of Human Rights, and that's a technical correction that I will make for the committee tomorrow. Madam Chair, with that, I will stop sharing my screen. I'll stand for questions for a moment before we pass it over to my colleagues in House Research.
Thank you, Mr. Harney. Members, are there questions of Mr. Harney on the spreadsheet that he has just reviewed for us? I'll give a minute or two to see hands up. I don't see any questions at this point. So thank you very much for walking through the spreadsheet. We'll now move on to the walkthrough of the omnibus bill language in House File 4376. Members, questions for staff will be taken once their walkthrough of the bill has concluded to kind of allow them to give the full picture. And we'll begin with Article 1 with Justin Cope in House Research. Mr. Cope, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Justin Cope of House Research. And Article 1 is the appropriations article, Madam Chair. So I do think Mr. Harney may have covered that in sufficient detail that we could move on to Article 2 if you'd like.
Yes, please.
So Article 2 modifies existing MHFA programs and establishes some new grant and pilot programs. Sections 1 and 2 of Article 2 amend the Homework Starts with Home program. Currently, only families with school-aged children are eligible for the program. With these changes, families with minor children would also be eligible. Section 3 establishes the Lead Safe Homes grant program so that nonprofits and political subdivisions could receive grants to provide lead testing and lead remediation in rental housing. Section 4 amends the law governing housing infrastructure bonds. It would add a new proposed use that would allow HIBs to be used to acquire, rehabilitate, and construct housing affordable to households at or below 50% of area median income. And it would allow up to 20% of the units in senior housing to serve individuals of any age with intellectual or developmental disabilities. This would also require that for applicants seeking HIBs, the agency prioritize proposed HIB projects that would provide housing affordable to households below 30% of area median income. And it would require multifamily housing funded by HIBs to include accessible and sensory accessible units. Section 5 would authorize MFHA to issue up to $400 million in housing infrastructure bonds. Section 6 would establish a grant program to preserve naturally occurring affordable housing. Section 7 would establish a grant program to improve supportive housing for persons who are either at risk of homelessness or who have experienced homelessness. Section 8 would amend the law governing covenants on housing. Currently, there's a 30-year limit on the duration that those covenants could last with some limited exceptions. This would expand the list of exceptions to include affordability covenants required by government entities. Section 9 would establish the Minnesota Stable Housing Mediation Grant Program, which would fund landlord-tenant mediation services. Section 10 would establish a pilot project which would issue a grant to the Midwest Minnesota Community Development Corporation to operate a grant program for first-generation home buyers. Section 11 would establish an MFHA pilot program that would award grants to nonprofits and to manufactured home park residents that would help them to purchase their manufactured home parks, either as cooperatives or to form resident-owned manufactured home park communities. And the last section in this article, section 12, would establish an MHFA pilot program that would issue grants to local housing trust funds. Those would be matching grants intended to incentivize local investment in local housing trust funds. And then moving on to Article 3. Article 3 is the MHFA Technical and Policy Bill, HF 3549, without that bill's articles included. So Section 1 simply corrects a typographical error, replacing insure with ensure. Section 2 specifies that agency loans for rehabilitation may finance the rehabilitation or the addition of a detached accessory dwelling unit. Section 3 would allow MHFA to use any funds authorized by Chapter 462A to fund either Indian tribes or tribally designated housing entities. Section 4 would require MHFA to prioritize use of any appropriations under Chapter 462A to serve households affected by housing disparities. Sections 5, 6, and 7 correct typographical errors, replacing insure with ensure. Section 8 removes a requirement from the Homework Starts with Home program that applicants for grants need sponsorship by the county in which the applicant is located. Section 9 again corrects a typographical error, replacing insure with ensure. Section 10 specifies language regarding the agency's debt ceiling, specifying that only general obligation bonds count toward the debt ceiling. Section 11 would authorize MHFA to issue refunding bonds to refund nonprofit housing bonds when the debt service on the refunding bond would be lower on the debt service of the original nonprofit housing bond. Section 12 would require Minnesota Management and Budget to transfer the amount necessary to pay the debt service on any nonprofit housing bonds that were issued to refund a prior nonprofit housing bond. Section 12 amends some definitions. It removes the income requirement for the definition of senior, adds a new definition of senior household that includes an income requirement, and then conforms the definition of senior housing with those changes. Section 14 would authorize the agency to use HIBs to replace federally assisted rental housing, and it would amend prioritization requirements for senior housing, both to conform that subdivision with the changes in the definitions and to remove a requirement that there be a service plan that was approved by local agencies and entities. Section 15 would authorize MHFA to issue HIBs to refund previously issued HIBs. And Section 16 and 17 would require the Minnesota Management and Budget Offices to transfer the amount necessary to pay the debt service on any refunding HIB bonds. Section 18 would add counties to the list of eligible grantees of the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Development Program. Section 19 would amend the definition of eligible project area for the Workforce Housing Development Program to include tribal reservations. And it would also clarify that eligible areas are areas that are outside of metropolitan counties. Section 20 applies the requirement of the Workforce Housing Development Program, which previously only applied to cities, to all eligible project areas. And it also expands the list of entities that can match a grant to include federally recognized tribes. And last, section 21 amends the 2021 appropriation to the agency, which currently only allows use to acquire and rehabilitate federally assisted rented housing, to also allow it to be used to replace federally assisted rental housing. And that concludes Article 3.
And I think we're turning to Mary Mullen, a legislative analyst from the House Research Department, for the next article. Ms. Mullen, welcome, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair and members. It's Mary Mullen from House Research. I'm going to be walking through Article 4, which relates to landlord-tenant law. In the DE2, this would be at the top of page 33. The first, second, and third sections allow new language to be added to the Minnesota Human Rights Act that prohibits discrimination in housing against an individual who's receiving public assistance. Sections 4 and 5 make changes to when the court can grant an eviction expungement. Section 6 prohibits landlords from imposing ongoing fees that don't relate to a service provided by the landlord and then impose a penalty for violating that section. Section 7 removes a provision from existing law that allows a tenancy at will to be terminated with 14 days notice. A tenancy at will is usually without a written lease, and the tenant would be required to get notice. That's as long as their periodic rental is normally. Section 8 at the top of page 36 provides specific heat levels that are needed in a residential unit during the winter. Section 9 clarifies notice and time requirements for a landlord to enter a rental unit. And Section 10 changes the existing penalty when a landlord enters a rental unit without the proper notice. Section 11 allows a tenant to terminate their lease with 2 months' notice for specific health-related issues. Section 12 prohibits a landlord from filing an eviction, from filing an action or proceeding on an action that's when one's already been filed for an eviction against a tenant for not paying the rent, when the tenant's applied for rental assistance and is waiting for a determination on the assistance. Section 13 requires the landlord to give 14 days notice before filing an eviction for non-payment of rent, and it keeps the eviction filing private until the court has issued an order in the case. Section 14 allows unlawful exclusion cases, this is when a tenant's been locked out, to be brought with the same filing fee as a conciliation court case. Section 15 at the bottom of page 45 in the DE, this section enumerates the reasons a tenant is allowed to file an action for emergency repairs in their rental unit. And then section 16 provides an updated procedure for filing those emergency repairs requests. And section 16 allows the tenant to pay the conciliation court filing fee for those same emergency repair cases. And that is everything for the landlord-tenant article.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions for Mr. Cope or Ms. Mullen after their walkthrough? Just giving a little bit of time to see if any hands up. I don't see any hands raised. Obviously, you the three of you did very clear presentations, and thanks to all three of you for your incredible and diligent work in putting this bill together. And members, then we'll move on to public testimony. We have 17 testifiers who would like to comment on the omnibus bill. In order for us to hear from everyone today, we have asked testifiers to try to limit their comments to 2 minutes each. And for committee members, please note that we'll take questions once all of the testimony has concluded. And we're going to begin with Ryan Baumtrog, Assistant Commissioner of Minnesota Housing. Mr. Baumtrog, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thanks, Chair Hausman, members of the committee. I'm Ryan Baumtrog, Assistant Commissioner for Policy at Minnesota Housing. Send regrets from Commissioner Ho. She's currently chairing the Federal Advisory Committee on Homeless Vets today, so couldn't make it to the hearing today. I just want to cover, and I'll be brief in my remarks, but want to cover a few things from the agency's perspective about the funding levels, the inclusion of the agency's policy and technical bill, touch on landlord-tenant provisions that are in the bill, and flag areas to continue working. So first, I just wanted to applaud the House and this committee with the historic funding levels in this bill and for the programs that it selected. We know that the state's housing crisis requires consistent, ongoing, and higher levels of funding, and I think that's represented well in the House's position. Overall, the funding levels in many cases are at the governor's funding levels or exceed. And would note that a number, the majority of the governor's recommendations and specific programs are funded either in whole or partially. And just want to acknowledge and appreciate the House's commitment to those programs. Those programs and increases in the governor's budget came from stakeholder feedback and where we know that the agency can put resources into communities quickly. Second, we really appreciate the inclusion of the agency's policy and technical bill language. These changes, sometimes small, can have a big impact, and they come from program managers and from stakeholders as we run and operate the agency's various programs. And in some cases, we'll save the state money on debt service. So really appreciate the House including the agency's policy and technical bill language. Third, around the issue of landlord-tenant law, there's a number of provisions in the House bill that are supported by the agency and the governor. I'll lift up the inclusion of the source of income discrimination provision, changes around expungement, and requiring 14-day pre-eviction notice. Those are supported by the governor, and we're happy to see that the House is moving forward with those provisions in their budget bill. Last, I'll just flag that the agency looks forward to working with members of the committee and the chair as we move forward into the next phase and working with the Senate, and especially on some of the new programs that are created in the bill. One program that I'll flag specifically where we're excited, but maybe have some thoughts as it moves forward, is around the First Generation Home Buyers Assistance Fund. We know that we need more down payment assistance. The state doesn't provide the agency with a lot, and so we use agency resources to do some of that work and are encouraged that the state would like to do more down payment assistance. One of our programs that we operate for down payment assistance last month served 75% households that were Black, Indigenous, and people of color. And so as conversations continue over the next weeks and month, we'd love to have more conversations about how we could potentially better target the language depending on where funding levels go. So with that, I'll conclude just by acknowledging the historic funding levels and a commitment to continue to work with you, Chair Hausman, and any members of the committee as we move forward into the next phase of the legislative session. Thanks for the time today.
Thank you. And we're joined now by Dr. Eric Anthony Johnson, President and CEO of AON. Dr. Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hausman. I'm Dr. Eric Anthony Johnson, President and CEO at AON. We own and operate over 6,000 housing units throughout the Twin Cities and beyond. I'm just here today to say thank you to the House for their support around everything they're doing in relation to affordable housing. AON has been a leader in providing housing for formerly homeless individuals. And in particular, we just want to say thank you for your support in bringing forward the Community Stabilization Fund. And we'd also like to say, as we go forward in the future, continue to look at ways to create flexible tools that can help us address this meaningful, affordable housing challenge. So thank you very much, Chair Hausman.
Thank you for being here and for your testimony. Jeff Washburn, Executive Director, City of Lakes Community Land Trust. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hausman and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Washburn, and I'm the Director of the City of Lakes Community Land Trust, which is the community land trust that serves the city of Minneapolis. Thank you and the Minnesota House for putting forward a historic affordable housing appropriation bill. By my estimate, it appears a sizable portion of this funding could be available for home ownership. Please bear with my nuanced comments by thanking you and by voicing that we need to be doing more to dedicate funding to affordable home ownership production in a year with significant budget surpluses. Over the past 20 years, our little shop has grown to assisting an average of 35 new low-income households achieving perpetual home ownership a year at an average of about 51% of area median income and over 56% of the households representing households of color. Consistently doing this year after year has allowed us to grow to be one of the largest community land trusts in the nation. And I acknowledge that's still not enough. We would not have been able to accomplish what we've been able to do without the state of Minnesota. The City of Lakes Community Land Trust has benefited from over $12.5 million in state investments through the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency over the years, and it's still not enough. This past year, our organization applied for close to $6 million in funding through the annual Minnesota Housing Funding Round. Ultimately, we were awarded close to $2 million, or about a third of what we requested of the $12.5 million available. That $2 million represents about 16% of the total amount awarded across the state, which is significant and very much appreciated. But it's still not enough. It's not enough because our organization alone has dozens of low-income households trying to do better for themselves and their families, and they're falling further away from the dream of affordable housing and housing stability for their families. The solution is both affordability and production investments. As an example, even if we were to be successful in allocating 100% of the $50 million appropriated for the first generation down payment assistance funding in this bill to households of color, we would move the state from the fifth worst racial disparity in home ownership rate to the eighth worst. That is positive movement, but we need more. Sobering is the fact that the interest rate increases alone over the past 3 months would probably erode much of the impact proposed to this down payment assistance. We need to do more for both home ownership affordability and production front. I realize this is just the beginning of a long road of legislative negotiations this year. In 20 years of watching these negotiations play out, stated affordable home ownership priorities have almost always disproportionately fallen victim to those negotiations. I'm hopeful affordable home ownership will do better in a year with a notable budget surplus. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. You've defined that challenge well. Ann Mavity, Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership, is with us. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you so much. I'm Ann Mavity. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Housing Partnership and no stranger to this committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in favor of H.R. 4376 and the impact it will have in creating more housing and more housing stability for Minnesota's families. For years, incremental investments have resulted in incremental improvements. And if we're serious about equity and serious about supporting the health of Minnesotans, supporting strong business growth, supporting educational success for our children, then we need action and investments to make sure that they're scaled to the need and demand for housing in our communities. And while more will be needed, this bill commits strong and historic levels of investments, and I thank the chair and committee members for your leadership on this. So particularly, there's notable highlights that MHP strongly supports. One, requiring the agency to allocate resources to address racial disparities. Now, households of color are disproportionately experiencing housing instability, cost burdens, poor housing quality. This bill will help turn that tide, especially including some of the tenant protections. Two, adding public assistance as a protected class will help hundreds of families utilize rental assistance. It's currently legal to discriminate against a prospective renter because they're paying in the form of a voucher, and this needs to change. Three, $400 million in housing infrastructure bonds is absolutely our single greatest tool to develop and preserve housing for Minnesota's lowest income households. It's a workhorse of a resource, and it allows communities to target leveraged resources for extremely low and very low income households. Number four, the $100 million in the Community Stabilization Fund we're particularly excited about. Minnesota loses more affordable homes than it produces every year. So this investment will be extremely cost effective as a way to preserve the housing affordability that we already have. And finally, five, the $7 million for Local Housing Trust Fund match. We know it's already going to be wildly oversubscribed. And in MHP's direct technical assistance that we provide throughout Minnesota, we're working with more and more communities to establish these flexible community funds. So there's more work to be done, of course, and notably, while we appreciate the various rental assistance investments, we do remain committed to working with all of you to create true equity and stability by creating a universal rental assistance program in Minnesota. But we do believe that this bill overall has strong historic investments, and we thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of it today and for all of your clear dedication and commitment to creating homes for Minnesotans.
Thank you for your testimony. We're joined now by Kathy Wetzel-Mastel, Executive Director of the Home Coalition. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Houseman, committee members. I'm Kathy Wetzel-Mastel, Executive Director of PRG and co-chair of the Homeownership Minnesota Coalition. I want to thank House leadership for the historic size of this bill, as others have done. I also want to share that the Home Coalition has put together a thoughtful, comprehensive plan to address our affordable housing crisis and included a wide range of strategies to address the racial home ownership gap. Some of the items in the plan are well suited to ongoing funding, while others are good uses of one-time funding. These items can be found in Representative Hassan's House File 3966, and we want to thank her for championing this important work. We are disappointed that none of HOME's recommendations were included in this omnibus bill, and the omission of the Workforce and Affordable Home Ownership Program is especially striking, since it is the only affordable housing item included in the governor's budget recommendation that was not included. And while we're appreciative that this program has since been added to the tax bill, we are also a bit skeptical, as we've been down that road several times before, and it is clear that our strongest allies are here on this committee and not the tax committee. As written, House File 4376 contains no set aside for affordable ownership production, and therefore no guarantee that new affordable ownership units will be produced. Additionally, the flexible financing for capital costs, which is aimed at using one-time funds to cover supply chain related construction cost increases, excludes the development for ownership units. Taken together, this is really discouraging, as we have tens of thousands of Minnesota families that are income qualified for home ownership, but rent existing units that are affordable at less than 30% AMI. A significant number of these households would jump at the chance to own their own home if there were any available affordable ownership inventory. The home agenda, if adopted, brings us closer to meeting the annual goal of 500 new units, up from just 100 today with the support of state investments. Outside of a few small community development agencies around the state, members of the Home Coalition are the only ones doing this important work. Amending this bill to include the Home Coalition priorities is an opportunity for bipartisan legislation to address the affordable housing crisis in a cost-effective way and to begin to make a dent in our racial disparities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, this is probably a good time to suggest to advocates and observers, it's going to be hard to track housing investment this year because you sort of have to follow four committees. You have to follow the Capital Investment Committee for the bonding bill. You have to follow this one, obviously, the Housing Finance, Health and Human Services, the HHS bill, and taxes. In a number of areas where we ran up against solutions that somehow didn't fit our target, we've shifted some attention to the tax committee, and I will say Representative Marquardt has been very, very helpful and welcoming to have those conversations. Representative Howard is doing a lot of that work as well. So following four committees is going to make your task a little more difficult this year. Thank you for your testimony. We're joined now by Annie Shapiro, Policy Co-Chair of the Homes for All Coalition. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Annie Shapiro, and I'm the Advocacy Director at the Minnesota Community Action Partnership and one of the policy co-chairs for Homes for All. Overall, Homes for All is very supportive of HF 4376 as amended. This bill makes essential investments in affordable housing at a time when Minnesotans across the state are facing housing crises. Many of our Homes for All top priorities are included in the bill, such as the funding for preservation of naturally occurring affordable housing, which we are especially excited to see included in base funding, funding for lead safe homes, and funding for the Local Housing Trust Fund state match. And we strongly support the proposed appropriation of $400 million of housing infrastructure bonds. We are also happy to see many key policy changes included in the amended bill. These include changes our coalition has championed around housing infrastructure bonds, such as providing accessible units for people with disabilities, and the new eligible use for deeply affordable units for low-income households who don't require supportive services. Our coalition has also advocated for manufactured home park residents' opportunity to purchase programs, and we're happy to see this provision included in the bill. And we are in favor of the provisions around tenant rights, such as the source of income protection, the pre-eviction notice, and the eviction expungement policy changes. As you move through the process and continue discussions with the Senate, we hope you will consider additional funding for affordable homeownership opportunities, especially those that will help reduce racial homeownership disparities, as Kathy and Jeff both have discussed, to ensure the full continuum of housing is addressed in the final negotiated bill. Overall, we thank the chair and the committee for putting together a bill that makes such strong and critical investments in affordable housing that will keep Minnesotans safely and stably housed. Thank you once again.
Thank you for your partnership in this work as well. And now we're joined by Sean Thomas, broker of ABC Realty. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hello, and thank you. I'm Sean Thomas of ABC Realty. And I want to thank all of you for all of this work on HR 4376. And I just want to impress upon you the critical need for us to increase the production of housing at the first-time homebuyer price point. As of today, the National Association of Home Builders say that 7 out of 10 households nationally cannot afford the average home price, a mortgage at $412,502, and that's national. But when we look at it from a Twin Cities perspective, the Twin Cities median sale price is now $340,000. That's up 10.1% in 1 year. And the Twin Cities inventory is down 19% this year. So that leaves us with a monthly supply of single family housing of 0.7 months of supply of single family housing and 0.8 months supply of townhomes and 1.7 months supply of condos. So for previously owned housing in that price point of $190,000 to $250,000, which is what we consider that first-time homebuyer price point, that inventory is down as of February this year by 20.7%. And so these numbers, I hope, impress upon you the absolute necessity to continue to push for the increase of production of housing at the first-time homebuyer price point. And I thank you for the opportunity to share this information with you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas. We're joined now by Greta Goetz, Policy and Advocacy Manager, Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hausman. My name is Greta Gates. I'm the Policy and Advocacy Senior Manager at Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. Twin Cities Habitat is pleased to see the meaningful investments in affordable homeownership that are included in House File 4376. We're particularly grateful to see increased resources for the Homeownership Education, Counseling, and Training, or HECAP program. Expanding capacity for HECAP will support much needed financial coaching, pre-purchase counseling, and homebuyer education, preparing more families for successful homeownership statewide. Thank you so much, Chair Hausman, for your leadership as a champion of this work. In addition, we are thrilled to see the Down Payment Assistance Fund for first-generation homebuyers included in this bill. This new approach represents a key investment in DPA that is both easily accessible to consumers and is strategically targeted to individuals who do not have access to generational wealth. A big thank you to Representative Agbaje for authoring this important legislation. We are so thankful for the committee's attention to these two programs and your focus on housing solutions that remove barriers to homeownership and reduce the racial homeownership gap. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gates. And we're joined now by Julie Guggen, Executive Director, Minnesota Home Ownership Center. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Chair Houseman and members of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee, I'm Julie Guggen, the president of the Minnesota Homeownership Center. For over 25 years, our organization has convened cross-sector industry stakeholders to advance equitable access to homeownership. As several of my colleagues have commented prior to my testimony, we are grateful for your ongoing interest in supporting homeownership as a wealth generator for households of color and others throughout Minnesota. The Homeownership Education, Counseling, and Training Fund was instrumental in establishing financial coaching, homeownership education, and advising as foundational steps for first-time buyers to achieve sustainable homeownership. Thank you for recognizing the importance of this programming by increasing investment in HECAT. The First Generation Homebuyers Down Payment Assistance Fund represents a groundbreaking opportunity for Minnesota to reverse the confounding racial homeownership gap by reversing historic barriers to homeownership. We are honored to join with Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity and the Minnesota Realtors to advance this bill, and are equally honored to be supported by a diverse partnership of industry and community leaders. Thank you to Representative Egbaje for her leadership on this legislation, and thank you for including this innovative pilot project in this bill. Thank you for your leadership and for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you for the testimony. We're joined now by Kyle Burns, Director of Public Policy, Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kyle Burns. I am the Director of Public Policy at the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association, known as MHA. I am here today to raise MHA's opposition to Article 4 of the Supplemental Housing Omnibus Bill. I will be brief. We did provide some written testimony to the committee, which outlines many of the concerns that we have and why we oppose the legislation. During this biennium, MHA has provided testimony on the proposals contained in Article 4. In some circumstances, we provided different language or an alternative remedy to solve the issues highlighted by the author. Unfortunately, none of those recommendations were adopted here in the omnibus. Article 4's provisions simply do not take into account how a rental business operates. We are very disappointed that the committee never held a hearing regarding the disastrous impacts of the rent control ordinance that was adopted in St. Paul. And finally, this proposal makes no improvements to the current local and state housing cost drivers. These cost drivers are pushing housing further out of reach of many and hurting the ability of the market to bring new housing units online at an affordable price. We appreciate the opportunity to provide our concerns today. We ask members to oppose this legislation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. And we're joined now by Tiffany Daniels, Managing Director, Minnesota Business Coalition for Racial Equity. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tiffany Daniels, and I am the Managing Director for the Minnesota Business Coalition for Racial Equity, or MBCRE. MBCRE was formed by business leaders to address the systemic inequities that have long impacted Black Minnesotans and ultimately prevent positive economic outcomes. Housing is one of the critical drivers of wealth and foundational to health, education, employment, and public safety. As a coalition, including many of Minnesota's largest employers, we know that our region's future success requires removing barriers to the economic success of all Minnesotans. A particular interest to this committee, and an issue that has been talked about for too long with little movement, is the Twin Cities metro area's racial disparity on homeownership rates between white and Black households versus other U.S. cities. On behalf of the coalition and our member companies, I want to thank this committee for putting meaningful funds towards closing the homeownership gap. The Minnesota Business Coalition for Racial Equity supports the $50 million request for the First Generation Homebuyers Assistance Program. While this is short of the $170 million requested in Representative Agbaje's bill, HF 4269, this is a solid start. The $50 million will help at least 1,667 households achieve homeownership. Some of the households that this fund will help can afford a monthly mortgage payment, or even save money compared to rising rental costs of similar housing. But those families may lack access to cash for down payments. This investment covers a small fraction of what is needed to close our homeownership disparity, but it is a needed start. As this bill moves through the process and into conference committee, we also want to draw your attention to other investments in homeownership we urge this committee to make. We strongly support the $400 million in new housing infrastructure bonds as a needed investment to increase the supply of affordable housing in Minnesota. The Workforce Homeownership Development Program and the Senate's new homeownership investment grants are needed commitments to building new housing, along with this bill's meaningful commitment to down payment assistance. We hope that these additional investments are planned and distributed proportionate to need and deliberately targeted to bridge racial disparities. In closing, homeownership plays a vital role in building strong and vibrant communities. As a coalition of businesses, we want to advocate for the role that strong communities play in supporting our region's future economic success. Thank you for your time and your efforts to increase homeownership access and opportunity across Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. And we're joined now by Kizzy Downey, Chief Executive Officer of Model Cities. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Greetings, Chair Hausman, members of the committee. My name is Kizzy Downey. I'm the CEO of Model Cities of St. Paul. And for 55 years, Model Cities has supported marginalized and underserved communities with an emphasis on meeting the needs and investing in the economic stability of Black Minnesotans. As rising rents, increased costs associated with home ownership, and overall housing instability across Minnesota has disproportionately affected BIPOC households, I was somewhat surprised to not see more investments in addressing racial home ownership disparities included in House File 4376. Like many other housing advocates represented here today, Model Cities has been working diligently to address racial housing and home ownership disparities for many years. And oftentimes it feels as though we are just continuously trying to figure out ways to simply respond to the growing needs versus working upstream to prevent the racial housing and home ownership gaps from continuing to widen between Black and white households. I believe that Representative Hassan's bill contained a capacity building component around production acceleration that would support organizations like Model Cities as we need to better support BIPOC-led and community-based developers with increasing housing production statewide. We just can't counsel and educate our way out of an issue that is also driven by a lack of housing infrastructure and affordability. If we are serious about addressing the racial homeownership gap, then we need to invest in a variety of strategies. We need to focus on housing production, targeted lending, and capacity support for BIPOC and small community-based developers. Down payment assistance is critical, but providing it alone isn't going to close the racial housing disparities gap. I, along with other housing and homeownership advocates, strongly urge members of this committee to demonstrate your commitment to addressing our homeownership disparities by amending this bill to include more resources to address these needs. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're joined now by Julia Burksteller, Public Policy Director, the ARC Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Julia Burksteller, Public Policy Director for the ARC Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding the housing omnibus bill today. The ARC Minnesota and our many coalition members, partners statewide, would like to thank you for including the provision on accessible housing in Article 2, Section 4. The provision starting on line 10.14 aims to address the lack of affordable, accessible housing for people with disabilities in Minnesota, including veterans and older adults. As you've heard in this committee, people with disabilities are experiencing a housing crisis in our state due to the lack of affordable, accessible, and inclusive housing. For many, this crisis pushes them into costly congregate settings, or they experience homelessness due to the lack of accessible housing. Thank you to Representative Ryer, Representative Juergens, and the other bipartisan committee members who are co-authors on this important bill. On behalf of Minnesotans with Disabilities statewide, We are grateful that you've made accessibility a priority in your work this session. Thank you.
Thank you. And now we're joined by Mike Bra, Managing Attorney and Hotline Director from Homeline. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hausman, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4376. My name is Michael Vra. I'm the Managing Attorney and Hotline Director at Homeline. Homeline provides free legal, organizing, educational, and advocacy services so tenants throughout Minnesota can solve their own rental housing problems. Our main program is a hotline that offers free, confidential legal advice to tenants throughout Minnesota. Tenant-landlord law in Minnesota is basically the same as it was in the late 1980s, before the iPad, before Amazon, before the internet. This legislation, if passed, would take some necessary steps towards leveling the playing field between tenants and landlords and modernize Minnesota's laws to keep pace with many, if not most, states around the country. Among other things, the tenant protections in this legislation will prevent thousands of evictions each year, expunge a tenant's eviction record if they want or settled a case or if their eviction is older than 3 years, create a statewide heat code when tenants don't control their thermostat, provide more clarity to what emergency repairs are, allow tenants to know the true rent of an apartment they are interested in rather than finding out about non-optional hidden fees at lease signing, and provide a tenant the opportunity to break their lease with 2 months' notice if told by a doctor that they need to move due to a medical condition. Well, I can't cover every part of the bill here, but I'd like to focus on one example that would highlight the importance and effect of this bill regarding the pre-eviction notice. Minnesota is one of only four states that does not require a landlord to formally notify a tenant before filing an eviction action for non-payment of rent. The simple filing of an eviction action by a landlord appears immediately on a tenant's record before the court has rendered a judgment or even heard the case. Once an eviction is filed, it appears on the renter's record as an eviction indefinitely. This legislation requires a pre-filing notice would be required 14 days before a formal eviction action can be brought in court to provide tenants an opportunity to fix the problem, negotiate an agreement with the landlord, or quit the lease and vacate the apartment unit, making an eviction filing unnecessary. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you for being here today. We're joined now by Sue Watla-Phillips, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hausman and committee members. Again, Sue Watla-Phillips, Executive Director of MICA, Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing. Thank you for these very critical and historic investments in housing. It will significantly strengthen our ability to prevent homelessness, and it will strengthen our continuum to housing to really assist people that are currently experiencing homelessness and people that are unstably housed in being able to get into homes. As MICA's mission is to work together to ensure that everyone, without exception, has a safe, decent, accessible home, whether that's rental or home ownership, that is affordable for them. As people of faith, we believe that we are to love and treat others the way that we would want to be treated. And we believe that the $9.253 billion is an abundance that we have available. And so while this is a critical and historic investment, we ask you to do more to address many of the concerns that have already been testified about the disparities that we have within our community, both in home ownership as well as in rental. We need to utilize these dollars now, because this is maybe once in a generation we'll have these dollars to really make that type of difference. This bill supports most of the Homes for All agenda, as Annie mentioned, and one of those pieces in the Homes for All is the Lead Safe Home Bill, which the chair has mentioned before that we've been back on this bill a few times, and we are glad to see it in the omnibus bill again. One in three homes in Minnesota have lead paint. We have over 700 children each year that are poisoned by lead paint. There is no safe level of lead paint for folks. It destroys the potential mind of a young child and their entire life, and makes their family life very difficult as that child struggles with erratic behavior and trying to just understand rules. And we lose the opportunity for a wonderful child to be a potential teacher, doctor, police officer within our community. It also costs us as a society $100,000 per child per year if they become disabled, which means we'll spend $6 to $7 million on one person, one child that becomes poisoned and disabled by lead. This is $2 million in the budget this year, and we want to build off of that. Lead paint poisoning is preventable. Let's protect our precious children's lives and their futures and help them to be all that God has created them to be. Thank you again for your support for this bill And we look forward to continue to work with you as this moves through the progression in this legislative session. Thank you.
Thank you. And now we're joined by Charlie Vanderard, the Government Relations Specialist to the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Charlie Vanderard for Metro Cities, which represents the collective interests of cities across the 7-county metropolitan region. Thanks for the opportunity to share our thoughts on the omnibus bill today. The state-local partnership is critical to meeting local housing needs. Metro Cities acknowledges and appreciates the committee's decision to make important investments that support statewide and local goals, as well as preserve critical and long-standing local authorities in housing. While cities play important and limited roles, including planning, land use, and zoning decisions, their financial capacities and property tax base are focused on core city functions. This bill recognizes the important role of the state as a funder and partner of cities. Madam Chair, the private market builds homes. Private and nonprofit developers make decisions on where to invest and build those homes. The funds in this bill will help preserve more of those privately owned homes, help renters afford their transition into home ownership, keep low-income families stably housed, and help close the racial disparities in home ownership between white families and families of color. In this bill specifically, the $20 million increase to the Challenge Program will support one of Minnesota Housing's most flexible tools. Cities appreciate how the state agency can use this program to meet the needs of applicants who submit requests through the Super RFP every year. That program, plus the $400 million in HIBs, are significant. These state funds are severely oversubscribed, and many cities would see developers build more new construction and property owners and homeowners preserve more existing homes, but for this bottleneck. Preserving existing homes through $100 million in NOAA preservation funds will be efficient and provide stability to families who want to stay where they live. The state match for local housing trust funds is innovative and it is flexible. We have heard from cities who would begin their own local trust fund if the state match were available. Combined with the $1 million in last year's bill, Metro Cities appreciates this commitment to helping cities meet their locally defined needs. Finally, Madam Chair, the commitment to home ownership and helping Minnesotans prepare for and afford buying a home will build wealth, provide stability, and make progress toward closing longstanding disparities. Metro Cities thanks the committee for your thoughtful approach to this bill, and we encourage the legislature to pass significant housing funds in the supplemental budget, as well as the bonding bill this session. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And we are joined by Daniel Lightfoot, Intergovernmental Relations Representative for the League of Minnesota Cities. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Daniel Lightfoot with the League of Minnesota Cities, which represents the collective interests of 837 member cities across the state of Minnesota. It's my pleasure to provide the League's comments on House File 4376 today. The $230 million in fiscal year 23 and $185 million in the TALES, in addition to the $400 million in housing infrastructure bonds, will definitely help strengthen the state-local partnership when it comes to addressing the construction, acquisition, and preservation of housing stock across the housing spectrum. And the League thanks the committee for its commitment to providing substantial state resources for housing this session. Support for resources for new and existing programs is crucial when it comes to addressing housing needs across the state. There is not a single city administrator or mayor that I've spoken with in the past several years that has not identified housing as an issue in their city, but those needs are different across cities across the state of Minnesota. And so the resources addressed here in this bill to address the entire housing spectrum, from assisting residents at risk of homelessness with FHPAP and the strengthening supporting housing model, to the new community stabilization program to support naturally occurring affordable housing preservation, as well as programs that bolster local innovation, like local housing trust fund matching grants. We appreciate the committee's approach to addressing housing issues across the state through policies and resources that address that entire housing spectrum, support local innovation rather than hinder it, and address community-specific needs, as well as incentivize rather than mandate, with support for programs that guarantee affordability across the housing spectrum rather than just aspire for it. Specifically, in Article 1, the $20 million one-time funding for the Challenge Fund Grant Program, as well as the additional funding added in the TALES, will support a key existing program that cities and their developer partners often utilize. It is also a program that is chronically oversubscribed and is one of Minnesota Housing's most flexible programs, which is able to be deployed in many different ways to address locally identified housing needs across the state. Building on another proven tool that cities are utilizing effectively, the $7 million in additional funding for Local Housing Trust Fund matching grants is another great step in the right direction to help assist communities across the state establish new and strengthen existing trust funds that are being used for a myriad of housing efforts, from gap financing, down payment assistance, to supporting actual construction and acquisition of units in a community. Several new programs funded in the bill that we're very supportive of and excited about that will help bolster local existing efforts. The $50 million for the first generation home buyer down payment assistance will be critical to helping expand home ownership and close the racial divide in home ownership in Minnesota. I should note this program is also, at least in part, modeled after a successful program that is operating currently in one of our member cities. We also know that we lose more naturally occurring affordable housing in Minnesota than we preserve each year. And the $100 million for the community stabilization program to help assist with NOAA preservation is a much needed resource if we are to address this critical area of the housing spectrum and mitigate displacement of residents. So Madam Chair and members, thank you for your efforts on this bill. We look forward to working with you and the committee as well as your colleagues in the Senate to ensure that we utilize both capital investment resources and surplus general fund resources to address housing needs across the housing spectrum. Thank you, and I look forward to answering any questions.
Thank you, and thank you to all of today's testifiers for your time and commitment to housing throughout Minnesota. We have valued your advocacy and feedback throughout our committee's work. Members, all of our testifiers were so careful about the time limits that we didn't run out of time for questions. So do we have questions for any of our testifiers? I'm giving a little bit of time. Representative Howard, do you have a hand up?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I don't have a question, but would like to just make a few comments.
Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you first to you, Madam Chair, for putting together an incredible bill that's going to make historic investments in housing. And I wanted to thank all the testifiers who really helped kind of crystallize how important this work is and the challenges that are in front of us. You know, as we've said over and over, Minnesota faced a housing crisis before the pandemic, and some of those challenges have only worsened. And this bill and the historic commitment we're making will help tens of thousands of Minnesotans afford their home, from renters to homeowners and everywhere else across the continuum. And I particularly want to thank advocates who have been pushing us to do more and to go bigger on housing over the last many years. I believe this bill represents us hearing that and finally making some game-changing investments. When you look at what we're doing to support the continuum of housing across supports for our homelessness in Representative Gomez's committee, the work in this bill as well in the tax bill and the capital investment bill, this House majority is proposing well north of $1 billion to support the dream of an affordable home for Minnesotans. And I think what I wanted to do is just provide a little context for folks about, you know, those are large numbers, but what do they actually mean for families? What are these investments going to help folks attain? And so if you bear with me, I have some data to share. When you look at our $400 million investment in housing infrastructure bonds, that will allow us to create over 2,600 new units of housing, and that's both multi-tenant and home ownership, helping 6,000 families afford their home. And when we do that, by creating more supply, we're helping lower the cost of housing for everyone else. The historic investment we're making to preserve naturally occurring affordable housing, that will help us save upwards of 5,000 homes for families across our state. Think about that. That's 5,000 families that will not be displaced when their facility or when their home is purchased and flipped into luxury apartments. Huge impact for families. We're making significant investment for renters. When you look at Homework Starts with Home, our investment helps almost 1,500 families. Our investment in FHPAP will help 17,000 households. The investment in rental assistance through our trust fund will help over 12,000 renters, over 1,000 renters, excuse me. Just to highlight here our work on renters, we have huge racial gaps when it comes to our renters being able to afford their homes. Some data that I was sent shows that Black renters are more than three times likely to be behind on their rent than white renters. And we already know that 58% of Black renters are cost burdened. We have to make investments across our entire continuum if we're serious about attacking racial disparities. And on home ownership, we are making historic investments. Representative Egbaje and Representative Hassan's leadership on the first generation home buyer assistance will create over 1,600 new homeowners, just life-changing investments with generational impact. When you look at our investments in housing infrastructure bonds, I believe conservatively that would create over $100 million more dollars in investment towards affordable home ownership, which is more than double the entire Senate target combined. And so, members, every Minnesotan deserves a safe and affordable home. And to deliver on that dream, we need to go big. And I'm just so grateful to everyone on this committee and our advocates that are helping us collectively make the case and do just that this session and with this bill.
Representative Howard, if you have that written, if you wouldn't mind sharing that with the committee, because I think what you've just defined are the impacts. We've talked about the dollars and the policy, but you've talked about the impact of the bill. And that might be helpful. Those might be helpful statistics for all of us to be reminded of. I didn't take notes as fast as you gave them to us.
I'd be happy to do that, Madam Chair.
That would be helpful. And it's motivation for us for our work tomorrow as we have worked for final passage on this. I don't see any other hands raised, members. In that case, I'll just simply say our next meeting is tomorrow, Wednesday, April 6th at 10:30 a.m. That's not our usual committee time. And at that meeting, we will consider amendments to the omnibus bill and vote on final passage. If we're able to finish our work tomorrow, we will not have a meeting on Thursday. Are there any further questions from members about our work this week? All right. With no other business before the committee, we are adjourned.